Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Pod Yourself a Gun. A Sopranos podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Sopranos and talk about it. We like to analyze. We like to discuss the art of it. You know, the film art of it.
You're probably not going to know how to watch an old TV show without us. So, like, yeah, you know, stay tuned. Otherwise, you'd probably just be lost. You'd be like, what's going on?
Yeah, you'd be like, I don't understand the motifs. Well, that's what we're here for. It's to break down all of the... No, not really. We are the world's only Soprano podcast, as our dedicated listeners already know. And yeah, today our guest is fucking no one, bitch! Because we decided, you know what? It's the first one of season three, and we're just gonna go solo dolo on this
they
one.
They need to have our takes, you know, unalloyed, just like straight from the tap.
Yeah, yeah, pure unadulterated takes.
That's
dude. Because we got Sopranos takes for days. You know, dedicated listeners of the show, you know, will tell you that, like, if you want to get some, like, fucking hot takes about the Sopranos, you gotta listen to Pod Yourself a Gun. Also, there you have no other choice because it's the only Sopranos podcast that exists.
That's right. Matt, what episode are we talking about today?
Oh, today we got a great, great episode. It is from season three, episode one. We're talking Mr. Ruggiero's Neighborhood today. And I'm very excited about it, and I will read the brief synopsis. But it would not be an episode of Pod Yourself a Gun without the theme song.
Play it, bitch.
Pod. 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 Podcast. Pod. 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 Podcast. Season three. Hell yeah.
Well, now that we've set the tone, the theme song always, you know, it does a great job of setting the tone for our show. And another thing that sets the tone is knowing the historical context of like what was going on at the time that this episode came out. What were the stories in the world? What were people doing? And so, you know, we call that the Remember When machine.
Walk, walk, tatty, daddy, bop, bop, shoo, bop. Remember then.
Remember when is the lowest form of conversation.
Boom, dude. We got, we just got stings for days. We got audio editing for days. If this is your first time listening to this podcast, I am guaranteeing you that you are already impressed.
Production
I guarantee
values.
That.
for you.
Yeah. So this episode of The Sopranos premiered March 4th, 2001.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're still pre-9/11. Still, you know, we're kind of in the 90s still, right?
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. It's 2001, but really the 90s ended on September 10th, 2001. That was the last day of the 90s. I think we can all agree with that.
Yeah. So I was looking up headlines for March 4th, 2001, mm-hmm. and sure. It turns out there was a New York Post profile of Jamie Lynn Sigler,
ooh.
AKA Meadow Soprano,
yeah.
To coincide with the season three premiere. So I just thought I'd read a little bit of that for you.
Please.
Style and Substance, Jamie Lynn Sigler. Jamie Lynn Sigler is the mob princess daughter Meadow Soprano on The Sopranos, and her teenage character will soon explore her sexuality on the show, which kicks off its third season tonight on HBO. She is growing up and developing, says Sigler. She's in college. She's got boyfriends, finally. You see a whole different side of her, says Sigler, 19, a former NYU psychology student who's temporarily put her studies on hold. It's not so much her interaction with the family side, but a lot more with friends. Although Sigler recently revealed that she fought a 3-year bout with anorexia, the actress says she's had a blast this year, shooting scenes with the new souped-up mafioso scripts. And that's not all she's been up to. The Long Island native and Manhattan resident has replaced Deborah Gibson and is co-starring with Eartha Kitt in the title role of the national tour of Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella. The stage fantasy comes to Madison Square Garden in the beginning of May.
Wow.
Sigler is also recording a pop album. Singing, she claims, is her true calling.
Is it?
Yeah. Who knew? That's why we remember her as such a pop star. When I was 5 years old, my brother had a movie-themed bar mitzvah, and I belted out The Greatest Love of All by Whitney Houston, the half-Cuban, half-Greek Jewish starlet says.
Damn, she's all over the place.
So I don't know if that's like Greek-Jewish or like we're not even...
Or Cuban-Jewish. Yeah. Who knows?
Well, whatever. It's just there's no comma between Greek and Jewish, so I don't know if that's, you know, if there's a...
Maybe there's supposed to be a hyphen.
Is Greek Jewish a thing? I don't know.
Sure. There's all sorts of Jews, dude. Come on. There's Jews from everywhere, you know. Name a place. They got a Jew.
Sure. The video is so
funny. Name a place, Vince.
Oh, Trinidad.
Yep. They got Trinidad Chaim. Okay. He's their guy. He's their one Jew. Right across the way is Tobago Chaim. That's his half brother.
Yeah. That's just a short canoe ride away. The video is so funny. I'm throwing my head back and closing my eyes, and instead of achieve, I sing a cheese.
So, wait, hold on. I missed the setup to that. What
that
is
that? Was the Whitney Houston song, The Greatest Love of All. So
Yes. So this is something that she's recalling from her brother's bar mitzvah.
Yeah. So at this time, you know, the stars of The Sopranos, they're becoming household names just about.
Yeah, no. I mean, I remember Jamie Lynn Sigler. Her non-Sopranos claim to fame was being a singing belly button in a commercial for something.
Wow.
And there was like a commercial. I
so
forget what it
was
for.
She was the voice or the belly button?
Nah, she was the voice.
Who was the belly button, though?
I don't know. Someone like probably like a belly button model, you know?
Cool. Yeah.
I'm sure that exists.
I could do that. I have a good belly button.
You do. You actually have a really good one. It's almost an Audi, which is weird because you're
any
not
Audi,
a baby.
Like you can see the bottom of it, you know?
Yeah,
it's
I don't
not
like that.
One of those gross Audis.
I like it when it's a girl. I like when girls have a little bit where you can see it. It's like even their belly button is lean. That's hot.
Sure.
But I have one of those like really deep belly buttons that you could put like your entire finger in.
A man could get lost in your belly button.
You get lost in there, dude. It's weird because it's like I don't like... I've never tempted fate because I want to see like how far does this go?
And
one time I got to like the first knuckle and I was like, that's enough. I don't want to.
Yeah. I don't want to know how far it goes.
I don't want to know, dude.
So other headlines of the day, March 4th, 2001. Viagra's growing recreational use prompts health warning. That's from the Miami Herald. Housing boom rolls on from the Arizona Republic.
Can we stop a second? Growing recreational use? Correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't Viagra specifically for recreation?
No. It treats a medical condition.
But the medical condition is
an erection. You take a Viagra and you can get one. But if you already have an erection and you just want like a super hard one that you can like chop a tree down with, then you take it. That's recreational usage.
Yeah, see, I don't understand that totally, because it's like, I mean, I guess if you're not getting fully hard, I understand taking it. And, you know, sometimes I don't get fully hard. Sometimes, you know, it's very soft. Mm. But when it's hard, it's hard like a rock,
finding out a
like
lot
granite.
About you today.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm going too deep too early.
We're
deep
way
into
down
that
in your,
belly
we're
button.
Way down
dude.
In your belly button now. other headlines. Fighting outside Kosovo raises fears in Balkans. LA Times.
Mm.
Other things that happened. The IRA detonated a bomb in front of the BBC television center in London, injuring 11 people.
They injured 11 people?
Yeah.
No, I'm not for anyone getting injured, but it's nice to know that, like, the IRA was still just kind of just around, like, you guys want to bomb something? Let's do it. Let's set off another bomb just for old
friends. I saw that Harrison Ford movie, and it got me all hot in the collar, and I thought we should do another bombing.
I heard they're trying to make a movie called Gangs of New York later, a few years from now. Anyways, let's bomb something. I can't think
Leonardo
of anything
DiCaprio.
Irish before. DiCaprio's a goddamn whop, and he damn well knows it. Anyways, so that's good to know. Yeah, IRA, huh?
The top movies were The Mexican, number one movie with Julia Roberts and Brad Pitt. I thought that was better than people gave it credit for. I liked The Mexican. Also,
I mean, the most famous thing about it is that there was that it starred Brad Pitt because
it had, you know,
he's
who
not
else
Mexican.
It had in it.
Who?
James Gandolfini.
No way.
Yeah.
I need to rewatch that movie.
I know. Number two movie was Hannibal. Old favorite of yours. Ray Liotta's brain. He hangs brain.
Yeah,
and
dude.
That one.
He hangs brain.
and then Sea Spot Run, which I had to look up, and it's actually a David Arquette cop movie where he has a dog for a partner.
Yeah, I remember this one. Yeah, I remember thinking to myself, like, ah, damn, you flew too close to the sun, Arquette. Like, you know, because he had like a career going because, you know, people were just like, he's so good and Scream, let's just keep trying him. Yeah. And they just tried it. And this was just like, this was towards the end when they were like, maybe kids movies?
Yeah.
No.
He had that brief Knoxville Dane Cook period, you know?
He did. But hey, you know what? Hey, fucking, you know, he came from nothing. Uh-huh. You know, the Arquette family famously came from nothing.
Yep.
And now he's here.
Here's the synopsis for that one. A mailman takes care of a dog that, unbeknownst to him, is an FBI drug-sniffing superdog that has escaped from the Witness Protection Program after becoming the target of an assassination.
I'm sorry, The dog is in witness protection?
That's right, yep. He had to take a new name.
Is that actually the dog? They're afraid the dog's going to snitch?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it is a snitch dog. That's kind of what those dogs are. They just sniff around and they're...
Drug-snitching canine.
A drug snitching dog? Uh-huh. Damn.
Top songs is Stutter by Joe featuring Mystical. Top alternative song was Drive by Incubus, which I feel like molested me as a child because I just could not. I feel like everybody I knew was into Incubus and I had to listen to it in everyone's car
I had a phase straight,
and I really can't stand Incubus now.
Yeah, no, I saw them live at the Forum in LA and it was like, you know, it was just a mind bending experience, dude, because it's just like when those grooves play, you know, when the DJ fucking just starts fucking playing those grooves. You can't help but feel free. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. The sky looks like a backlit canopy with holes punched in it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't trust him because he's too good looking. And I don't trust any good looking musicians. I think musicians should be ugly the way God intended.
I totally agree.
And if they're not, it's a problem.
Yeah. I mean, he definitely, he came from the stock of rock and roll superstars that were still, back when there were still like open fuckboys.
Yeah.
Like when it was clear that this guy was like the Perry Farrell type body, mm-hmm. where it's like, you know, the guy's like, I fuck. And you're just like, I know.
Yeah.
You're cool with it.
He's kind of like the proto Adam Levine, I would say.
Yeah, but like Adam Levine definitely, he's a more classic type of, he's not a sad boy, but he's like a fuck boy who like really, he had to be sold into fuckboydom. Uh-huh. Like first he had to be Maroon 5, right? You know, and like those fuckboys were just trying to like sing to you to make you want to fuck. Whereas like he just is now like shirt off, like, yeah. You know, now he's a more...
He's openly thirst trapping now.
Yes, he's openly thirst trapping. That's correct.
Yeah. All right. Well, so that was what was going on.
Well, that's what was going on.
In March 4th, 2001, which brings us to the season one opener.
Season three.
Season three, episode one, the debut. So this was originally a two-parter when it aired.
Really?
So, yeah. And I think it shows...
What do you mean? It aired?
Yeah, the first like two episodes aired
two 30-minute episodes.
Yeah.
Oh, that is weird.
Yeah. So there was two episodes that aired on the same night.
So the brief synopsis of this, Agent Harris and his team concoct an elaborate new plan to wiretap the Soprano home now that Pussy is singing with the fishes instead of for the feds. That is the description that we got direct off of HBO Max.
Hey, I heard your mom's big pussy was singing for the fishes.
Fuck you, dude.
Sorry.
No, it's fine.
When your mom joking there.
No, you gotta talk about fucking my mom. It's fine. it takes a big sip of wine. Yeah, so first of all, I just want to say I thought that was a pretty strange synopsis, mostly in that they shoehorned the word singing into Sleeps with the Fishes just so that they could kind of do a play on words and make it instead of for the feds. And I'm just like, you don't have to do that. I mean, that's not your job.
Maybe, you know? Maybe the person who wrote that had a hand in this episode because this episode is extremely cute. And everything is extremely on the nose in this episode.
Yeah, it is very on the nose.
Starting with the musical choices, mm-hmm. which are, there's the main theme song, which it gets into right away. The FBI is talking about bugging the house and, you know, they're talking about different ways they're going to stick it to Tony. And then they decide to bug his house. And that leads into a mashup song of... Henry Mancini, dun 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 dun
dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun. What is that the theme song to, by the way?
It's called Peter Gunn theme.
Don't know Peter Gunn.
Peter Gunn was an American Private Eye television series.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
Craig Stevens as Peter Gunn with Ola Albright. It aired from 1958 to 1960.
Seasons, and the theme song is more famous than the show.
Yeah, I mean
that's so funny because it's like an opposite. It's an opposite Sopranos problem.
Yeah,
you know where it's like if Sopranos wasn't as good as it was, then we would have never heard of the Alabama Three.
Yeah,
and the theme song
would have been a crime against humanity. It just
I mean, there's an alternate universe out there where people don't know what the Alabama Three are.
Yeah, where
and
the Alabama
I don't
Three never got famous. I don't want to.
Oh, fuck, dude. I don't want to live in that world. No. Fuck that. So that's mashed up with the Police's I'll Be Watching You.
I think it's called Every Breath You Take.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, all right.
We get it. It's a song about like someone watching you and the show's about surveillance.
Yeah, no, I kind of feel like this episode like an alternate title would be called The Sopranos or The FBI Watches The Sopranos.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's kind of what this entire episode is. That's like the theme of this episode is like, what if the FBI were watching the show Sopranos? because the show Sopranos is about the mafia, but also about how they just are normal people most of the time. And it's like, yeah, no, that's cool. It's a whole meta episode. It feels a little bit like they came up with the mashup first.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they were like, we gotta make an episode about this.
I mean, the entire thing is, like, all of the musical choices are, like, painfully on the nose. I'm actually shocked that this came out before Ocean's 11 because I was convinced that the whole theme song was some extremely Soderbergh-ass shit. You know, people doing stuff to cutesy music. And yeah, I'm going to play a little bit of that just so you can get a feel for it.
This does not look good, Mrs. Bing, bearing north on Grandview Avenue. She's turned onto Boxwood Road. She's heading toward the factory.
It's just like a terrible sax orgy. It's a really bad mashup. I know you said in the episode notes that you liked this mashup, and I would just like you to defend your choice.
Okay. I enjoy the mashup, but keeping in mind that I am someone who really enjoys when people experiment with shitty audio. Like, the theme song to this podcast alone should indicate my love for this mashup.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, dude, those things mash together so good. Like, hell yeah. Like, I remember first time I watched that, I was like, oh, dude, it's like the same song.
And this was like the episode that inspired Girl Talk or whatever the mashup.
Definitely. Guy. Definitely. Yeah. It was like, yeah, Girl Talk probably saw this and was like, I wonder if there are other songs that work together as one song together. Like, it, for sure that like, this is a it's just a mashup for the ages.
It feels like they couldn't figure out which song was more on the nose for a sequence about the FBI surveilling Tony Soprano. And they're like, what if we just stuck them both together.
Oh yeah, no, for sure that they decided like to this does feel like a throw everything at the wall and see what sticks type of episode. Because it is just kind of all over the place.
I mean, but other music in this episode, there's that you know, there's Tony singing along to Dirty Work just after he's picked up a paper and read the headline about how there's a mob war in the garbage space. What is it? The waste management? Yeah. Anyway, he's singing to Dirty Work. And it's a great example of Tony's acting. I really like when actors have to sing and perform in character because, like, you know that Gandolfini is an actor, so like he's probably done a ton of musical theater by this point.
Oh, for sure. In real life,
he probably can sing like an angel. I don't know that I've ever heard it, but I would be shocked. Any actor that far in their career that couldn't sing, I would be kind of shocked by.
Yeah, guaranteed that he can sing and probably tap dance.
Yeah, and so you know, he's singing in character. We have a clip of that, and I really enjoyed that Tony singing in character.
You're gonna two, you got bottom thing headed your way. Excuse me. Unit three, Mrs. Bing also in motion.
I'm a fool to do your dirty work. Go, yeah. I don't wanna do your dirty work no more.
Can I just say why, like, I think that little sequence is fantastic? Just for me, what this episode is mainly about is, I don't know, I kind of feel like this episode, it's like a meta episode where the FBI kind of represents dumb guys who watch The Sopranos and don't know it's a comedy. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, the FBI are the people who watch The Sopranos who have like a Scarface poster in their room, who they're just like, oh dude, it's so cool, it's so much mafia stuff, dude.
First he's gonna get the money and then he's gonna get the power.
Yeah, and then you get the women, and it's just like, and then so that's like the FBI, where they're like, you know, Bing is en route right now. They're all very serious, and he's just in his car singing Dirty Work. It's to me, that is, that's kind of the theme of the episode throughout. It's just like the FBI being hella serious about, you know, about stopping OC, you know, organized crime, and then seeing that most of what's happening is just these hilarious, like the little minutia of being in a family.
White dude problems.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And that's what the show is. That's what makes the show good. It's not good because the mafia is cool. It's good because the mafia is kind of lame and suburban.
Yeah.
And that's, to me, that's why I enjoyed that part. In particular, and also
I definitely agree that in an episode of extremely on the nose musical choices, that one was by far the best, the one that works the best, because, you know, it's a musical choice that's on the nose, but it's also gives you a peek into Tony's character, and it's just a brief little snippet that makes you chuckle a little bit. It works a lot better than the mashup to me, which was very annoying. And then they finish off the episode with Elvis Costello, which, great song.
Yeah.
But also
High Fidelity.
We get it. High Fidelity. Yeah. You know, they're listening.
Because they're recording. No, I get it. It's on the nose. before we go further, I think I would be a fool not to list all of the Bada B stories.
You're
in this.
A fool to do our dirty work. Oh no.
I don't want to suck my daddy's dick no more.
Sure.
Oh my God, we're never going
to
get
Welcome
a fucking sponsor.
Welcome to Pod Yourself a Cum.
Oh, this episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Promotion code, I don't want to suck my daddy's dick no more. Oh God, get 30% off of books. okay, it's the season 3 premiere, and here are the Bada B stories. The FBI is buggin', Pat Parisi is chuggin', Tony is thuggin', Meadows' roommate needs a huggin', Adriana's got nice juggins', AJ is shruggin', and water heater is fuggin' up. Not my best
those,
work.
Did you know those rhymed when you wrote them down? Or
that was, no, was I didn't. That was just a coincidence. Oh, and man, all of them, I would say that, like, I don't know, like 5 out of 8 of those are, you know, correct.
We call call that kismet.
Oh, is that what we call it?
Yeah, serendipity.
But yeah, so those are kind of all the Bada B stories. AJ is shrugging, really stretch there, because he's not really.
If I could give my general thoughts on this episode,
please.
I feel that a lot of the adult storylines in this are kind of like the main mafia storyline feels it's utilitarian, we'll call it. But
sure.
I really like, they're having fun with the kids storyline, and I appreciate that. Like AJ and all his dumb friends, and they're like standing around talking about how the cafeteria line would go faster if everybody was on boards. And
it is so strange to me how good the writers of The Sopranos are at writing middle school white boys.
Yeah.
Like, it is so on point that it's freaky. Yeah. Like, maybe every writer in the writer's room had a middle school aged boy who skated. and so they all were very familiar with this lifestyle. But it's so impressive. That conversation about, man, I can't believe they don't let us bring our boards to school, is a conversation I have had many times before while I was in middle school. It was like this thing where there was a time in the 90s, right, where there was a very popular like bumper sticker that I was out. It just said, skateboarding is not a crime. And what it did was it instilled in us this feeling that in skateboarding, we were committing a crime.
Yeah, and you were rebels. You were dangerous.
And we were rebels, and we were fighting against a system that had made skating illegal.
Yeah.
Important to point out, skateboarding, not illegal. Probably never been illegal. And but for some reason, it was just, I think it was because like you weren't allowed to skateboard in the mall.
Yeah, well, all the cool steps and rails had some security guard out there whose job it was to shoo kids away. So
Yeah. Basically, there was police out that specifically targeted kids who were being too rad.
Yeah. And also, I would just like to step back, like pull back on this and zoom out, because I think pop culture on the whole between, I would say, 98 to right up to 9/11 was like collectively like a middle schooler. You know, this was like the heyday of like your Korns and your Papa Roaches, your Crazy Towns. And like, I can't imagine listening to any of that music if you're not in middle school. It seems very strange.
I know.
Like the idea that there was adults making it and adults signing it, thinking like, oh yeah,
like full grown men
were doing that, and
that was their job. They were at work.
Yeah, I feel like we all had to grow up, you know, when 9/11 happened, and it's sad. I feel like we lost our innocence. Like we lost the innocence of rebelling against, you know, some days you just don't want to wake up. Everything sucks.
Yeah, totally.
You know, your mom wants to make you do the dishes, and the lunch later says you can't ride your skateboard in the cafeteria line.
And yeah, I miss those days. No longer is, you know, all I wanted was a Pepsi, mom. You know, now it's, you know, all I wanted was America, mom. Like everything became tinged in patriotism after 9/11. So like the music kind of like, it's just, you know, and part of me is like, that culture is just a better culture, because like it was they took what I would say is like an amount of anger that we currently still have. But rather than focusing it on our fellow man, you know, and like partisan politics, it focused it on just kind of this nebulous,
the everyday degradations of the common man. Like, instead of teaching us to hate each other, it was unifying. It's like, man, don't you just hate it when you be walking through your living room and all of a sudden you stub your toe? What the fuck?
Yeah. Go! So who fought? Something up the steps of the toe. Who fought? Something they fight. Yeah, that shit ruled.
Yeah. No.
Like, really, every Korn album was about a guy who stubbed his toe. I mean, that's all it was.
Yeah.
And it was great. Anyways.
We miss it. But so, and then the other kid storyline is obviously Meadow, and you know, talking about the writers really getting into the mind of a middle school boy, I think they also do an incredible job of profiling what like someone who moved to New York for college is like, and they're, and you know, and they have, because I've lived in New York, and everybody, I think, you know, when you move there, your first 2 months, like all you're going to be talking about is how it's like the center of culture and like the greatest city in the world. And like, oh, everyone should live in New York just once if they have the means to. And and Meadow's crazy roommate is a fantastic character going forward. And I'm just going to play you her intro, because this is like 20 years later, like this is one of the characters that I remember the most, weirdly. Like, As far as single serving characters go, like she's pretty great. So here's the our first introduction. Did we get her name?
Caitlin.
Caitlin, that's right. Okay.
Oh on BHS, fight right through that line, run that.
I actually didn't notice the background audio there, where like someone's randomly talking about a Jello shot, and it's like a foreshadowing to the next scene.
Caitlin, I missed that.
Where they did, where she has all the, again, like pitch perfect. Like the middle school stoners are talking about skateboards, and then the college girl has all of the Absolute posters from the different cities.
She's literally collecting corporate art on her wall.
It's great
to celebrate her love of drinking, which is
chef's
kiss.
Ball to the goal line, y'all should have come.
Where'd you go?
We started off at Smokes as usual.
But we wound up at this place, Ruby Foo's, around Broadway and 65th or something. It was so fun. God, did I get hammered.
Don't you have a quiz today?
Frosh Week technically ended at midnight. What do they expect? I'll study now.
Did you have a Frosh Week? What's Frosh Week?
I imagine Frosh Week is just like a bunch of events thrown by the university to welcome the new class of a freshmen and get them kind of like into school activities and shit like that. I think we had something like that. We never use the word frosh because I went to UC Santa Cruz and I think frosh was probably, I don't know, it was probably considered a racial slur or something. So so we I think it was just like a freshman week or something like that. Yeah. It was just like a week of like random like school sponsored dances and
yeah,
shit.
This smacks of a private school. I definitely remember when we had a friend up in Pomona Pitzer, one of those colleges. Mm-hmm. And I remember they had like school sponsored keggers because like private schools were all about like fostering actual school spirit and like getting people together. Whereas I feel like public schools were like, all right, guys, don't hang out. Please don't hang out.
Exactly.
Just go to school and then don't do stuff together.
Yeah, it's just cops coming in to break up every class because they think a protest is about to happen. Like public colleges and private colleges. I mean, not only are you know different types of administrators, but also a different breed of student too. Because I agree that like these they did a great job of like showing these kinds of like university students, but I had such a specific college experience that, there's definitely you can really feel the privilege in all of the college kids that you see in future episodes of The Sopranos. So it's like to me that's where it's like a little bit different because there was definitely privileged kids at UC Santa Cruz, but it was you know it, at the time I went it was no one's first choice. it was like one of those years where if you applied to UC Santa Cruz, you got in.
I know I have a bio lab. I haven't read any of the chapters. Oh, still miss New Jersey? It's only like half an hour away. It's just this transition. It's a lot of work. I mean, I just think New York is an experience that unalterably changes a person.
It is really great.
And all this freedom of college. Can make it here, you'll make it. Boom, boom, anywhere.
When did you have your last cocktail?
11:30 this morning.
They do just such a good job of making her like the nightmare roommate, but also like, not. And it's perfect, but it's also not too on the nose. She's not, you know, she's not like single white female or something. She's just like a little. She's very unique, but she's also every college freshman.
And like in the following scene, back at the college at Columbia, with the roommate, she has an arc because her story then goes, you see her like, you know, happy and drinking and like fucking excited. And then next you see her alone and in the room and traumatized from living in New York. And I thought that to me, I was like, that's amazing.
It
like
really
showing it, cause it is traumatic for anyone who has never lived in a city, let alone a big enough city that like would to inoculate you from like just the dregs and disgustingness of New York.
Yeah.
Like you're going to be traumatized by it.
I mean, that's the entire arc of living in New York, like in one day where it's like, you go from being like, oh my God, this is the most amazing city. You can do anything here. Everything is possible. And then it's like, I saw a guy getting killed on my way to the subway. That was like one of the first things I noticed about living in New York was that, you know, you're just in such proximity to people that you would witness at least one relationship changing fight. Like, in just in the course of going about your day, like you couldn't not witness two or three relationship changing fights in the course of a day.
You saw some breakups happen, you know, a week in New York, and you're going to see at least two ruined marriages.
Breakups, people that aren't friends anymore, all the stuff, like someone disowning someone. It's all public. You're watching it all. And it's also
someone fat shaming their round son. You're going to see,
like, you go through the whole arc where you're like, oh, this is amazing. Everything's connected. I can get to all these spots that I've heard about, from pop culture all my life. I can get there, like, just on a short subway ride. And then, you know, a month later, you're like, oh my God, it takes me fucking 7 hours to go to the grocery store.
Yeah.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
No, I mean, New York is hell, but it is also it's also a city I've never actually lived in. So for me, New York, every time I visit, I'm just like, it's just beautiful here.
Yeah.
And like, if you go there
for like a week, you're like, this is the most incredible place. Why wouldn't everyone live here?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I also like being surrounded by trash. So I feel like I have the right temperament for it. Also, growing up in LA, even though it's like not even close to the like close quarters nature of living, in New York. But growing up in LA, you know, it's like, oh, I've seen a lot of crazy shit. Like, I'm at least low key inoculated from it. But yeah, the Caitlin character is one of kind of the most memorable characters in terms of like periphery characters of The Sopranos. And it's strange because I don't think she makes more than two appearances in the entire series. In fact, I don't even know if she's. Oh yeah, no. She definitely. You see her one more, at least one more time. Oh,
there's
but,
a whole arc where she kind of goes down the crazy rabbit hole.
Yeah, is, yeah. But we'll get to that in future episodes. Yeah.
She's just a great comment on urban living, really.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So that's the kids. Now, in terms of what's going on, you know, with the rest of the adults in this episode, there's a few different storylines that are going on.
Really just one, and then the rest
I guess
like,
there's just one.
I mean, basically, like it's the FBI and Pat Parisi, and that those are the only two real stories. The other ones are just... there's like,
yeah,
I love the maybe lesbian tennis coach though. That was,
yes. Can we talk about the tennis coach?
So as soon as she
bit?
Shows up, like, the FBI are surveilling the tennis class, which was a great excuse to go extreme male gaze with the cinematography. Cause you know,
yeah, again, you know, the theme of this episode is like dumb guys watching the Sopranos and like, for sure, if you're a dumb guy watching the Sopranos, one of the things you'll mention about why you like the show is like, oh, I love there's like titties on it.
Yeah.
There's really, so many titties. They go to the strip club and then there's titties. And it's like, that's kind of what they're doing.
I would like to read an oral history on how they did the nipples in this episode. Cause they introduced the new tennis teacher, Birgit.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the actress who played Birgit. Apparently her dad was the editor of Us Weekly. So that's a little bit of
cool.
A little bit of trivia for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she shows up. She's a tennis coach. She's very, very conspicuously not wearing a bra when we first see her. Which, interesting choice for a tennis coach. Let's just say.
Yeah, I mean, but she had I mean, you know, I'm not trying to be like, you know, whatever, but like she had little titties. So to me, it's like, you know, it's probably not very comfortable wearing a bra. The freedom. I don't know. I liked it.
Sure. I think what that very clearly communicated, like, sex is going to be this character's thing. Like, it was like you saw her, and in 1 second you're like, okay, this character is going to be sexualized in a way, and sex is going to play a part in this storyline for sure.
Yeah, and I found myself getting mad at her because like the storyline is basically. Carmella, you know, her normal tennis coach has to quit and take a job.
Who apparently was some sort of, you know, like eye candy for Carm and Aid, which was funny when you looked at the guy because he kind of just looked like any like Jersey meathead.
Yeah, dude. he's just not Tony. So Carmella's horny for him.
Sure. Yeah.
So he has to he leaves, but leaves them Adriana and Carmella in the care of this new tennis teacher, and she spends the whole time just kind of hitting on Adriana, I think.
Yeah. And doing a wicked stepsister thing with Carmella too.
Yeah, being kind of mean to Carm, and like me personally, I was just like, first of all, she's dating Chris, so back off. And second of all, like Carmella, you know, Carmella's actually doing okay. You should really give her some positive reinforcement. I don't know. I felt very protective of Carmella, you know, when what is her name? Birgit is like just kind of like, I don't know, chastising her, but then saying how great Adriana's doing. And I was just like, ugh.
She's very so obvious in her crush, you know? It's very silly.
Yeah. It's too obvious.
The character's name is Birgit Olaf's daughter. So clearly they're trying to make her Icelandic.
Icelandic, yeah.
She's very very on the nose with her crush. Like she was treating Aid good and Carmella bad.
That is so much detail for this character who does not make an appearance, I think, ever again in the show. They gave her a first and last name and decided, she'll be Icelandic. Like that is a
yeah.
Wait, what's her last name?
Olaf's daughter.
I wonder what the name of her father is in real life. Cuz you said he was the editor of
her father's name's Charles.
All right, well that fucks up my theory,
sorry,
Vince.
Sorry. Sorry.
Man, fuck you, dude. But yeah. I had something going there that I feel like a few people who are listening were like, ooh, that would have been cool. Anyways, it did feel like...
I also enjoyed that they really amped up the trash on Adriana this episode, where they're just like,
oh yeah,
she's chomping her gum, she's showing up to tennis practice with a cigarette in her mouth, and then and then the next time you see her, like, she has really hard nipples for some reason.
She got super hard nipples, and then she also has leopard print underwear.
Yeah,
and it just goddamn. You know, just like, I mean, I got to be honest, like, when I talk about dumb guys who watch Sopranos to get horny, like, I'm not above that, you know? I'm not, like, we're all equal on this podcast.
Sure, sure.
So when I make fun of people who are dumb and watch Sopranos, what unites us is that we love the Sopranos, but also I'm one of those dumb guys a little bit.
Part of it, it makes me wish that I grew up in Jersey, where that I, like, in a place where I would experience more Adriana's, because I don't know that we had like super hot white trash where I grew up. So
yeah, no,
or at least not in this way. I mean, definitely we had hot white trash, but not in like the Jersey Guido-y way, which is a very specific sort of thing.
Yeah, I do feel like if I had grown up in that specific situation, I feel like I would have done just as well with women as I did when I, you know, was in high school in Los Angeles. Like I just don't think
yeah.
I don't think that Guido's,
I don't think what I got would have played very well either.
I mean not your personality, no. But I think,
especially
you're
not in high school.
Yeah, I would love to know what a Vince Mancini was like in high school. I mean, I imagine you were a little bit, were you more of a meathead or less of a meathead?
I would say like both more and less somehow. You know what I mean? Like I definitely had the intellectual, like, I'm above this attitude.
Sure.
Kind of, but also, yeah. Yes, but I also was a jock also. So I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
A little of both.
I think you would have done well. I think you would have done well in that environment. I think I would have been bullied more, to be honest. I think that was the one thing that my life in high school was missing was, by the time I reached high school, I stopped having like white boy bullies.
Uh-huh.
There was assholes, but they weren't bullies. And I feel like if I went to fucking if I lived in New Jersey and grew up there, I definitely would have had some white boy bullies.
Sure.
Like people who would be like, hey, check out this fucking queer Jew. And I'd be like, why are you calling me gay? Anyways.
I think the thing that you miss about my youth experience is that as an adult, I have all these outlets for like my creative side and the dumb jokes that I like to make.
Sure.
Whereas, you know, as a high schooler where I didn't have like a job in the arts and a place to like get rid of all my dumb jokes that I like to make, it was probably just like that all the time where I had to actually like shout them at people. And
yeah.
So, you know, there's probably some of that desperation going on.
Oh, sure. Sure, sure, sure. All right, moving on. The main storyline that's not the FBI bugging the Sopranos is Pat Parisi is openly lamenting the fact that his brother was killed in front of
he's being very Italian about it, I would say.
He is such a drama queen. Number one, he's doing it in front of the people that he definitely suspects of killing his twin brother. And he's right that it was his twin brother was whacked by the Soprano family. And he is being a super drama queen. So it starts out where he's celebrating his birthday, but he's sad because it's also his twin brother's birthday. And he's explaining, you know, like he doesn't even know why he was killed. He was never like he was never a heavy guy, you know, in the mafia and whatnot. And I have a clip of something that I love that they do on The Sopranos is like Patsy gets so dramatic that he low-key implies that he wants to kill himself.
Yeah.
But
they're such good guys about it. They try to talk him out of it.
Don't it happen that identical twins, a lot of times, they'll die within a couple of days of each other?
That would have been okay with me, believe me.
Hey, look at this. God forbid.
God forbid.
God forbid. I mean, you gotta love.
Oh, hey, come on. Oh.
Come on. Oh, what are you doing? You talking about you want to die? Listen, we kill people who don't want to die, but if you want to die, we have some concerns. It is such a strange, yeah. It's such a strange reaction.
Hey, you gotta get to a shrink or something over here.
Yeah, you gotta talk to a counselor about that, because over here, the only people who die are people who are screaming for their mother. Like, it's so detached from the reality of the life that they lead that they would be like, oh, man, suicide. Because, you know, every time they talk about suicide, the sad thing about it is always that it's a sin.
Yeah, yeah.
That to me is my favorite thing. They're just like, oh, suicide, oh, that's a sin. You can't do it because it's a sin. Like, murder's not a sin.
Jesus doesn't like it when you kill yourself.
Jesus only likes it when you kill people who are pissing in their pants right before they die. Jesus hates when you commit suicide rather than being killed on the streets like a dog. Anyways.
Yeah, well, I think that's, we've talked about this before, but like the entire dramatic tension of the gangsters and the Sopranos is that they're trying to be like these gangsters from like the 40s and 50s that they've seen in pop culture and maybe they've had some experience with in their lives. But then, you know, at the same time, they're living in the modern world. They got a dipshit kid who's listening to Pantera and, and they're trying to be like sort of, self-actualized 90s males. But you know, and that's the tension, but they have to keep up this appearance like, they're a mobster, that they're a James Cagney character, and so anytime anyone punctures that veil, they're like, oh, come on,
yeah, we're a bunch of tough guys over here, we like to fuck and kill, we don't think about death and the absurdity of life,
the absurdity of life. And then you know, Christopher is great because Tony is very clearly trying to get Patsy to shut the fuck up about his morbid bullshit. And Christopher is very like, yes, and like, yeah, isn't it?
Yes.
Isn't it? Don't twins have like a special connection?
Do you feel like maybe, you know, if someone in this room killed, it's just like, and Tony's reaction is just to clear his throat at him. It's very perfect. And it's like
my gabagool over here.
Yeah. It's one of the scenes in this episode that feels, I don't know, it's the only one that doesn't feel this like weird kind of disjointed thing. Because I would say the majority of this episode is very strange. It's like, it's clear they're doing something different. You know, they're doing this like meta, like it's the FBI watching the Sopranos thing, right? But it's not just that, because there's also the transitions are strange. The music, like you said, it's too on the nose. And then also it's the way the music is utilized is you know, there's, I think in the opening scene, it just suddenly cuts off between scenes, which is not, I mean, they've done it, but it's like the... It's like the harbinger of something like, oh, this is going to be a weird episode. It's going to be weirdly directed. And then there's a lot of scene transitions that just are like fade, you know, fade to black, fade back to the scene. And it's like there's no music. And I don't know. It just felt disjointed.
I think.
And this is the one scene that I was like, this is why I love The Sopranos.
Right. Yeah. It's a great scene. I think the... I think knowing that this is a two-parter makes a lot of sense, because it's like a lot of stuff is happening in this episode, but normally in a normal Sopranos episode, there would be like a button, like it would come to a head more at the end. Like it would kind of, and this one, it kind of ends in the middle of act two, you know, in a way that other episodes don't.
Right.
But like knowing that it's a two-parter makes a lot of sense. You're like, okay, well now... it's obvious that this was not a full episode.
Yeah, yeah. It's just it is it's a strange one for sure. I mean, the fact that it's a two-parter, I guess maybe could explain it. But to be honest, I'm still kind of confused as to how this episode was a two-parter. Yeah. Maybe if I saw it again and was able to and why they did it in two parts is like, why would you split it to 230 minutes? Was there something in between? Like, why even did they play the theme song twice? Why did they do it?
Yeah. And then, you know, like the there's a good Polly moment in there, but it's also it somehow if it feels like a solid Polly moment, but also like kind of try-hardy.
Really? To me, it's a classic Polly moment. I don't think it's try-hardy at all.
But it's a little, I don't know. It's stretched out. We have a clip.
Beautiful coat. What the fuck you doing? Lunch is ready.
Wash my hands.
You just washed your hands.
Then I tied my shoes.
So what?
I can't stand touching fucking shoelaces. You ever go to tie your shoes and you notice the end of your laces are wet? From what? Why would they be wet?
I got no fucking idea.
You go to public bathrooms? You stand at the urinal?
Oh, fuck. Come on, will you?
He's asking me. I'm telling him. And frankly, it's important. Even if the lace is dry, and even if you don't touch the body of the shoe, bacteria and virus migrate from the sole up.
You see this on TV?
I gotta watch TV to figure out the world. Your average man's shithouse is a fucking sewer. You look at ladies' johns, you could eat maple walnut ice cream from the toilets. There's exceptions. But a man's? Piss all over the fucking floor. Urinals jammed with cigarettes and mothball cakes. And they can pour all the fucking ice they want down there, my friend. It does nothing to kill germs. Even if you keep your shoes tied and you're not dragging your laces through urine.
Oh, shut the fuck up.
I mean,
I feel like they could have ended it right after when he's... what the hell was he? What did he say? Oh, I gotta watch TV to understand the world. I feel like if you came out of it right there, boom, you don't really need the rest of the speech.
But yeah, just, no, I agree with you. It definitely, to me, that is the button of the bit. And I at the same time, I also did appreciate like the joke of he just keeps going until Syl's like, could you just shut the fuck up? Because yeah, he really should shut the fuck up. But to me, that's not at all try-hardy. Like, to me,
I mean, it's part of the dream of the mafia is that you can use crime to work less hard so that you can sit around and just complain about shit with all your buddies.
Yeah.
Then I mean, that really is the Italian-American dream, is that you just you kind of sit around with your buds and complain about random shit all day.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, listen. I think that's everyone. I would imagine that's everyone's dream, but I mean, you know, it's certainly my dream. It's a podcast dream.
Sure.
But yeah, I think that because of the fact that we are so familiar with Polly, you know, with Polly's character and the kind of like the way he's written and whatnot, that looking back at that, it feels a little bit shoehorned, right? Like part of you.
It feels like his character is so defined at this point that it's like a Kramer scene, you know? It's like, ah, Kramer comes in and he's got a new thing this week. He's hitting golf balls into the ocean. It's like, all right, well, this is Polly's thing this week. But, you know, I still liked it.
Yeah. And to me, it's got this, I don't know. I think it may have been the first time I heard this, you know, shoelace theory. And it stuck with me ever since. I've been like, I will never touch my shoelaces without washing my hands after.
Sure. I think there was a Seinfeld where Jerry replaced his shoelaces because they touched the ground in a men's bathroom. So I think there was a...
Maybe the Seinfeld episode was first. I could see that.
There was some foreshadowing culturally, I think.
Yeah. Anyways, shoelace theory I thought was good. It was like, again, this entire sequence in the episode to me is what I enjoy about The Sopranos. You know, a little bit of like mafia beef, a little bit of tension, and then also a little bit of Polly just talking shit. You know, and not to mention, you know, the kids' storylines are all very good. I mean, to me,
I wanted to add. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, no, go ahead. I was just going to say, to me, the episode could have been less about the, like, they didn't have to make a whole episode about the FBI bugging them.
Well, the FBI is very much like the least interesting characters in the show. They're all very absolutely dull. They have not been fleshed out at all. My question was, so Patsy Parisi's got a twin brother. Mm-hmm. Didn't Jeannie Cusimano also have a twin sister who was played by the same actress?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So I was like, how many times are they going to use the identical twin plot device in this show?
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. But at the same time, I feel like
Then again, you're a twin, so you're like, you are.
I'm twin defensive. I'm defensive of twins. I think we're people too, and that we deserve to, you know, my only problem is that if you're going to use a twin or have a twin storyline, you got to use an actual twin or else you're doing twin face.
Yeah, that's true. And me, and,
you know,
being an only child, anytime I see like a heavy sibling storyline, I'm like, this is bullshit. People aren't like this. No one's that upset about their brother dying. Get out of here.
No one's ever been sad.
Get out of here.
Yeah. No one's ever been suicidal after their brother was killed by the mafia. Fuck off.
I mean, it all culminates in that scene where Patsy looks like he's going to kill Tony, but instead he just pisses in his pool.
Yeah, which is a fantastic scene.
Yeah, great scene. Like they built up to something good there. That was good. That's a quintessential Sopranos scene, I think.
What I loved about it in particular was, again, Patsy is such a drama queen. It is just this very operatic moment where he like has the gun. He's right by the pool. You know, the FBI is watching, like, oh shit, you know, Parisi's about to fucking, you know, kill Tony. And then he takes the gun and then he just kind of does this like, mamma mia, what is happening to me?
Mi pistola, oh, mio pistola, no.
This is what become of my life since my brother died. it was very operatic. And I mean, thought that was like beautiful. Like,
in his head, he's doing a Godfather. But
thankfully,
this isn't The Godfather. Like, and that also, that entire thing feels very Italian, where like you're trying to do this big dramatic thing. But in reality, you're like, I don't really want to do that. I'm just going to piss in his pool instead.
Yeah. And so then he just pisses in his pool. What I also love is when he points the gun, you know, away and then starts doing the Mamma Mia thing, immediately the FBI goes, he's drunk, which I like, when I first watched it, I remember thinking to myself, like, I wasn't thinking that he was drunk. I was thinking that he was just, but if they saw it and they're like, oh, I recognize this.
Yeah.
This is drunk.
Well, he was treating his gun like it was a dying baby or something. He was like cradling it. Like, oh, no, a mio pistola.
Yeah. It was very, very funny. And it just ends with him pissing in the pool. And then Tony, you know, confronting him about basically just saying, like, I need you to explicitly tell me that you are over the fact that your brother died and just leave it alone. And then he does. And then that's that storyline. We could go through like the motions of like the FBI storyline about the water heater and all
cares?
That, but the whole thing, who fucking cares? Yeah. It's just like, it's just not interesting. It's poorly put together. It's not really compelling. And
it's a spine for like some of the other, it's a spine for the other interesting storylines, but they really kind of, I don't think they needed to belabor it so much.
Yeah, I agree. And also, so let's get into most favorite, least favorite.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
First I'm going to start with my least favorite. And my least favorite is when the FBI guy, agent, whatever the fuck, what is his name?
Agent Pastafajol.
Yeah, Ike Harris. I don't know. The guy called him Mike. Maybe his name is Agent Harris. Shows up to like the head FBI guy's thing and randomly says the pun in the name of the episode.
What's up, Ike? What happened at the Soprano house was the water heater blew. A unit saw Ruggiero come back with a flatbed and haul the old one out.
Ruggiero, plumber?
Why?
My sister used to live up near there. She was friends with Mrs. Ruggiero.
Yeah, it's Mr. Ruggiero's neighborhood. Anyway, we have to get this thing in there.
I mean, what's the pun that it's like Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, but it's Italian?
Yeah, Mr. Rogers. It's
great. Good job, guy. Like, they really were like doing like a fucking Got Milk cutesy level.
It was just too much. And also, like, so, and I know this only from watching some new Netflix series about the mafia, but Ruggiero specifically is a reference to Angelo Ruggiero, who he had his house bugged by the FBI, like, in the same way,
okay,
where they did like a sneak and peek, and they like bugged his phone and shit like that, pretended to be like the phone company or like the cable company or some shit, and then he accidentally brought down the mafia. So it's like they're doing a reference. They're doing this like, oh, this little like wink to mafia nerds by naming the plumber character Ruggiero and naming the episode Mr. Ruggiero's Neighborhood. But like the titular moment in anything always makes me cringe. Like, you don't have to say the fucking title of the goddamn movie or TV show. Or it's just like, to me, it's like, who's, why, you know, like. It was strange and
it's just like this whole episode is a lot of did you guys see what we're doing here? Did you see what we did?
Yeah,
there?
It really is. It's just like this. There's more handholding, I think, in this episode than there ever has been on The Sopranos, where they really want you to get the art. And like, as someone who just naturally knows about art because I got a good brain,
you love to get the art though.
I love to get, but I already know the art because I'm good at knowing to seeing art. So like, I don't like the constant handholding of this episode. That being said, my favorite scene of the episode happens immediately after that scene, in which Agent Harris reveals the code name for Tony. And I have a clip of that.
Dabingle has left the building. They fucking made me.
Like,
I don't know why you like that so much.
Dear Bingle, like, because they keep coming up with code names, like Baby Bing is on the move. And then when it comes to Tony, Dear Bingle is what they went with. And it's like this moment where it's like, it's very like, you can tell it's self-aware and he's being self-serious and whatnot. And then just immediately being made by Tony.
Yeah.
Like completely like making the whole disguise and the codename useless. He might as well have said Tony Soprano is currently leaving and it would have been fine.
True.
And so I thought that was a good moment, similar to the like Dirty Work, you know, a contrast scene. But yeah.
My favorite, we've already discussed it basically, but favorite is you know, the introduction of Meadow's roommate, because as a former Columbia student, you know, hit home also, just great in every way. Like, she's very unique.
Yeah.
Yet she's also every college roommate. Just a great character all around. And then least favorite is just that fucking mashup. Like, the worst part was when there was like dueling bad saxophones at the same time in the middle. And I was like, that was like the third time that they played that same mashup. Jesus Christ, guys. Like, we get it. You made a mashup.
They were very proud of it. Listen, I get it. That's why at every episode of The Sopranos every episode of Pod Yourself a Gun, I insist that you play all of the bumpers, which is why you're about to play the bumpers to my favorite segment. It's the 90s.
It's the 90s. Parents are supposed to discuss sex with their children. It's the 90s. It's the 90s.
You're my butterfly, sugar. 90s. Hell yeah. So, in terms of 90s references, there's a few really good ones. The tennis coach leaves his job because, quote, Kitty got this .com job in San Diego.
Uh-huh.
Another thing Tony says to, I forget who he says it to, when they're about to have a discussion about some like secret mafia shit, he just goes, log off, that cookie shit makes me nervous.
Yeah,
which is that is wonderful. And then finally AJ
One of his friends, when they skip school and they're like hanging out in front of like a liquor store or some shit, someone says, "Hey, AJ, let me have a hit of your Snapple." And AJ says, "Don't backwash," which is
that whole thing. Let me have a hit of your Snapple is just perfect.
Yeah. Let me have a hit of your Snapple. Maybe the most 90s sentence ever. And then don't backwash. Fuck.
Yeah.
Like you just, my God, that is, it's the perfect encapsulation of middle school 90s kids. Backwashing was a huge thing back in the day.
Yeah.
People don't understand, you know, before COVID, people used to share drinks and it was very important that you didn't backwash. What is backwash? Well, that's when it's assumed that some people take a swig of something and then once they're putting it back down, they spit just a little bit back in to the bottle. And that is just something that people, I guess, assumed people did. I've never done that. I don't understand why it was an issue.
I don't understand like how you were supposed to control that if it was a thing.
Yeah, because I was thinking, like, are you talking about microscopic? You know, like just the fact that my lips have touched this at all? Because I mean, at that point, and then what you would do in order to remedy the backwash was you would do waterfalls. Now, waterfalls was a move where you poured the drink out of the bottle into your mouth, but you never actually touched the lip of the bottle to your lips. Thus, a waterfall would appear of Snapple and or Coca-Cola, Sprite, whatever you were drinking, to not think about how your dad hasn't said he loved you in a few weeks.
Look,
but like,
if we'd been maintaining those kind of safety standards, would we even have COVID? Probably
we wouldn't
not.
Have COVID if people would just stop fucking backwashing.
Yeah.
See, that's a problem with today's America. People, they started backwashing and COVID happened.
Too much backwash.
Too much backwash. All right. I think our final segment, Gaba Vafangul. I actually did find a new Stevie B that we haven't done before. But
nice.
In terms of the Italian-American slang that we heard, we heard brajol, which is broccoli. Is that broccoli? What's brajol?
No. Brajol is, it's like a piece of beef. It's like a, it's basically a rollatini. You take a piece of like relatively lean beef, you pound it out, you put some herbs in it, and then you wrap it into like a little roll, and then you like braise it in some tomato sauce.
Okay, but if you saw how brajol was spelled, you would think, you would understand why I thought it was broccoli.
Yeah, they should change the name of Broccoli Rob to brajol.
Yeah, brajol. Hey, this is brajol and his best friend, Broccoli Rob. another was stunad, which we've done on this show before.
Broccoli Rob is like a good like drag name, like kind of thing. Oh,
Broccoli Rob is YouTube Rob. Star who talks only about vegetables. Y'all, what's up? This is Broccoli Rob. Like, comment, subscribe. Today we're talking about asparagus. But this was, I think, the first time, I don't know if it's the first time that they've said it on The Sopranos, but it was the first time I heard it, where someone says, "My Goomba, Joey Flies," which, by the way, Joey Flies, great name.
Just that sentence, "My Goomba, Joey Flies," solid.
"My Goomba, Joey Flies," maybe the most Italian thing ever. So, Stevie B, let us know what a Goomba is.
Hey. Hey, so doing? Hey, I'm Stevie B, and the Italian-American slang word of the day is Goomba. Goomba. One day after work, I'm walking down the avenue, and I see a new place, Louis. I walk in. There's not many people in there, but there's a nice guy behind the bar, Louis. I find out after talking to him and having a drink, he owns a joint. Now, me and Louis, we're Goombas. Minigun.
He's really got some wind interference this time. I like that Stevie's he's adding degrees of difficulty every day.
Yeah, this is new. This is new Stevie B or old Stevie. Maybe this is before he, you know, kind of got a little bit better with the audio stuff. But yeah, he's like by a lake or something. So there's some wind going on.
One day after work, I decided to take a little walk down the boulevard. There's a new place there, Lewis's Tavern. I walk in. There aren't many customers. There's a man behind the bar, Lewis, who I find is the proprietor. I order my favorite Johnny Walker Blue and
talked to Lewis for a long time. There's been many nights like that, and now Lewis and I are best of friends. Goomba!
Great job, Stevie B.
God fucking love Stevie B.
Takes us out on a high note every time.
Every time. Every goddamn time. So yeah, that's the episode. Yeah. I want to thank everyone who has been yelling at us on Twitter for 3 months now, telling us to get our butts back in gear to make more episodes of this show. Really appreciate it. We've been yelled at so much that I look back to see when the last time we did an episode of this was and saw it was in May. And I feel confident in saying, like, it's not been that long, guys.
Yeah.
Come on. Relax. Like, yeah. You know.
We took summer off.
Yeah. I mean, come on. Anyways. Yeah. But we're happy to be back. We're happy that you're happy. Please tell all your friends about the show. You know, tell them. Just be like, hey, there's this great show. It's about The Sopranos. If you like The Sopranos, you'll love it. And even if you don't, you'll still love it.
Yeah,
so just
yourself.
Tell your friends about it.
Yeah.
And make sure to give us 5 stars on iTunes and leave a review. Frogcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, concerns. You know, let us know if we miss anything in this episode or just want to talk about Sopranos in general. Patreon.com/Frogcast. That's where you get me and Vince. We do bonus episodes of a show where we just talk about whatever. If you like us talking about Sopranos, you'll love us talking about like Bill and Ted's third movie or whatever. So it's exactly like this one, but it's a little bit more swearing. Vince, what's the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everyone. Thanks so much for listening. And until next time, don't stop believing.
Hurry into Menards and save big money. Stock up on water softener salt for softer skin and cleaner clothes. Diamond Crystal is the perfect choice of salt to minimize water softener tank residue. It helps your soaps and detergents clean better while increasing the life of your appliances and plumbing. Save big on Diamond Crystal products at Menards. And don't forget to check out the flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.